welcome to another episode of the Blue Team Podcast, your weekly unofficial podcast dedicated to all things Peterhead FC. Our Blue Team Legends series continues as we are joined by former Peterhead striker Andy Rogers. Andy tells us about his time at Peterhead, including the controversy around that Dunfermline game and his partnership with Rory McAllister.
Right, Andy Rogers, welcome to the Blue Team Podcast. How are you doing?
Not too bad, mate, not too bad.
How was your last year, 18 months been? It's been a bit of a difficult one for Ardy. How's it been for you?
It's not been ideal, no. I've been lucky enough, I've worked through a majority of it, so it's kind of given me Saturday, but no, I'm a bit done with it, to be fair.
Do you think because you've worked through it, it's helped you?
Because we helped that.
Me and Martin's both worked right through it as well, so I think it's kind of it's helped us.
Oh, 100%. I think I was maybe off for about a month last year, but no, I couldn't have done much longer.
But you'd have felt like a long month.
Oh, hard. Definitely hard.
It's all these folk has been sitting on furlough for the last year, you know, they think it's life for Riley, but no, I think I would prefer working like...
Oh, definitely.
Right, so we'll get on to Andy Rogers, the footballer then. So we started... for your hometown club, Falkirk. How did that come about?
I signed with Falkirk when I was about 15. I signed S-Forms. So I knew I had a couple of years, 15s and 16s. And then from there, it was obviously just a matter of who got YTS contracts at the time. About it, and I was lucky enough to get one. And I ended up, it was 2 years YTS and then a couple of years pro. So now look, that was kind of dream come true stuff for me. I was a Falkirk fan. Growing up, season ticket holder, etc. So, all my family the same. So, no, that was brilliant.
Was it one of that kind of things you were kind of pinching yourself when you signed the contract for the first time?
To be fair, I had when I was maybe 16, I think after my first year at Falkirk, when I was 15, 16, I had the chance to maybe go and try and pursue a move to... I'd been training with Celtic one night a week, and... maybe cause a wee bit of aggro and my dad he was pushing for that even though he was a Falkirk man, but it was just one of them where I knew what I wanted to do and luckily enough it sort of paid off for me.
Did it take a while to sink in that you'd signed?
I knew I was signing maybe 3 or 4 months before I did. I was actually still at school, I'd done a fifth year at high school, so I knew then. So the last 4 months in my sort of school time seemed to drag it because I knew what was then at the end of it anyway, so definitely it took a bit to realising what had actually happened.
And YTS, you don't hear much YTS these days, do you?
No, I think that's a massive problem in football, to be honest. They're not all the same, it's harsh to label them all, but there's too many young kids in football nowadays who think they know more than what they do, and I think they've made it at far too young an age. Look, the two years YTS were probably the best 2 years of my career, like enjoyment-wise, every day working with your best mates. But don't get me wrong, there was some hard graft in there, and I think that's what a lot of the young boys miss nowadays.
Do you think that helps you not only develop as a footballer, but you know, almost develop as a man, as a character as well?
100%. But some of the stuff that happened in those 2 years... Yeah, it wouldn't happen nowadays because people would cry bullying, they'd cry whatever, but it was growing up, it was part of... I think it gave us a respect for the senior players, which I think is probably missing now. I don't think young boys respect senior players as much as what they did back then, so I think it's a massive loss that they don't get that anymore, or the majority don't anyway.
Do you think that some younger players are maybe too pampered nowadays compared to what it was years
100%.
Ago?
100%. I think they come into the game at that age thinking everything's rosy and everything's going to be wonderful and it's all going to be great. And they'll eventually learn that that's not the case. But now look, if you didn't want to work hard, didn't want to do the dirty side of the game or the dirty side of life, then they'll come a shock at some point.
Yeah, so I think I know the answer to this question, but do you remember your debut?
I was actually, believe it or not, it was quite a funny story. I'd played for the under-18s on the Tuesday or the Wednesday against Kilmarnock and got sent off. I actually got sent off for a foul on a, a wee winger, wee Stephen Murray, that went on to play with Kilmarnock's first team. So I got a straight red card for a tackle. So the Saturday, the first team were away to Ross County, and the 18s were playing in the morning. Can't remember who they were playing, but so I got called in on the Friday and says, look, you're travelling with the first team to do the sort of, to do the kit, to help the kit men as a sort of punishment, because it was the Dingwall, it was a massive drive. I thought, oh great, I punished, sent up to Dingwall. And it wasn't until 2 o'clock till we arrived, the manager Alec Tottenham actually pulled me and says, look, you're on the bench today, that's the reason you're here. And luckily enough, we about 15 minutes to go, we were drawn 1-1, and I went on to a sub and ended up scoring the winner, so we won 2-1. So it went for what I believe was a punishment to scoring the winner on my debut, so it was good.
Did it help you, the fact that you didn't came, you were playing for an hour before kickoff?
Probably, aye, probably. And even at that, even I just had the mindset, it was back when you're only allowed 5 subs, and we had 3 strikers on the bench, so even when I got named on the bench, when I was warming up and that, I thought, oh, I'm not going to go, and there's another 2 strikers there, but no, I decided to put me on, so I was delighted.
So I just think, if you hadn't got it sent off a few days earlier,
there's a possibility I could have been playing with the 18s on the Saturday morning.
What did Alex say to you before you went on?
He just said that, go and enjoy it, go and try and get us a goal. He says there's no pressure. As I said, it was only 15 minutes ago, the game was quite open. It was quite an important game, we were both sort of battling relegation at that point. He just says, I'd scored a lot of goals for under 18s that season, and I just said, go and try and grab us a goal. So, and the other part was, I went on to sub for Kev McAllister, Crunchy, who was literally my hero growing up, so that made it that wee bit more special.
Alex is obviously a legend at Falkirk, but like a man was he to work under?
Aye, it was brilliant. It was, again, as I say, it was one of the ones where there was just a massive respect. When he came into the room, there was just an aura, everybody listened. It was hard on you when he needed to be, but it was also brilliant, especially with the younger boys. He would sit with us for hours, tell us stories. If you ever needed him, his door was always open. You could always go and speak to him. But as I say, if he needed to give you a blast, he wasn't shy in giving you a blast. So I think that's the kind of mixture that you need.
Did you, after you come off the scoring the winner, did you think that was it? You a Falkirk player now?
Well, it made me realise that I was capable of going playing at that level. Obviously, when you're 17, 18, it's all well and good playing well in under 18s, but you're playing against men then, and albeit it was only 15 minutes, but it gives you that belief that you can do it, so aye, definitely.
It was shortly, I think, after that Alex had left, and he worked under Ian McCall, Owen Coyle and John Hughes. Didn't they really get much of a chance under those guys though, did you?
McCall especially, I think that probably set me back. He brought a lot of boys in, a lot of experienced players, which was fine. They'd done what they needed to do, but when he sort of left halfway through the season, under Coyle and Hughes, I got a lot more, albeit off the bench, but I did play most games. But then in the summer, Coyle left, and it was just Yogi that ended up getting the job himself. And again, Yogi was the... I played 8 or 9 games that season, but we never started great, and I seemed to be one of the few who missed out at that stage and ended up having to move out on loan. But look, that's just football. There's things I could have done better, and there's things that I thought went against me, but you just got to deal with it.
And what's this a trial at Tottenham all about then?
Well, that was literally after my debut. So 15 minutes of football. I think the story went that the Tottenham scout was at Dingwall watching Don Kiwi.
Okay, yeah.
He was playing the Ross County at the time. And just literally that Monday after the game, Alex Tottenham put me in and says, look, I've had a phone call for a boy at Spurs. He wants to know if you're available to go down next week for 4 days trial. He says, I've told him I'll give you my blessing as long as you're back on Friday, because we'll have a game the Saturday. He says, so I need you back for a day's training before. So literally the very following week, I went down for the Monday to the Thursday, and it was just unbelievable. It was a different experience altogether. Actually, lucky enough, I played a sort of bounce game, reserve game down there, and I had went for, I think I played 15 minutes, I played about an hour the following Saturday, and then on that Tuesday I was playing a team with like 7 or 8 internationals, just when I Tottenham's training ground against Peterborough, which was something I'll never forget. I loved it, but obviously nothing came out at the time, but No, it was excellent.
Did you think the guys were on a wind up when they were telling you Tottenham were
I couldn't believe it. As I said, I played 15 minutes, so I was like, nah, definitely not over. And I knew after a few minutes that Alec wasn't really the type of guy to muck about and play and banter or whatever, so I knew he was serious. It's just I didn't realise how quick he meant, and obviously I was only 18, so it was the first time really I travelled away myself. I had to flew down to London, got picked up at the airport for somebody from the club, and stayed in Diggs down there with another boy. So no, it was a great experience. So.
There's a massive difference between Tottenham and Falkirk, though, was there?
Oh, it was incredible. It was. I would say the standard that I know Spurs have now got a new training complex, but the training complex that I went to, I would say it was probably on a par with like Murray Park at Rangers, and that was. I'm going back 25 years, so. It was something special. So just even watch some of the players train, the standards that they had, how good they were. But, and obviously, I realised that at that age, the physicality difference. But everybody was huge. I went in there like skin and bones, and it just seemed to be monsters. So no, it was definitely different.
Your time at Falkirk and then was it a wrench to leave?
It was a difficult decision because I still had a year left of a contract. So we went back one pre-season and Yogi pulled me in and says, look, you're not really part of my plans. He's like, I'll not force you out. He says, you've got a year left if you want, but the likelihood is you'll be training with the reserves. You'll not be involved. He says, but I have had interest with two or three other clubs if you want to speak to them. So I took a few days and I just felt at that time I was about 22. I felt the right thing to do was go and try and play every week. And I still, to this day, probably think it was the right thing to do. So, no, definitely no regrets, but it was difficult. Man.
Did you appreciate his honesty by telling you that you're not going to be in
the plans? Definitely. He could have wasted my time. I could have, as I say, there'd been a year at my career, maybe a 22, 23-year-old, that it's a time that you really need to be playing. So, no, look, every manager can make decisions. I totally get that. And as you say, he was honest enough. He never strung me along. He never took the mick at me, so I definitely respect them for that.
And you end up going to Dumbarton and then Montrose. What was your experiences at those two clubs like?
Dumbarton, at my time, 2 years in, to be fair, I really enjoyed it. I worked. The reason I signed there was because it was one of my family friends, Brian Fairley, that was a manager at the time. So I knew what I was getting for the sort of management team. And look, the first season, I think we missed out on promotion back to. Which been championship maybe a point, and then the second season Paul Martin came in and unfortunately we were relegated. But my second season at Dumbarton I had quite a for a team that got relegated. I think I scored 18 or 19 goals, so I did really enjoy it. Unfortunately, that summer Paul left and the club were left with no manager right the way throughout the summer, which made it difficult. Nobody knew if we were coming or going, so that's why I moved on to Montrose. And to be fair, Montrose was probably. Maybe the only 18 months of my career that I would say I haven't enjoyed my football. If I'm being honest, I started, again, it was pretty similar. I went and David Robertson was the manager. And for about 6 weeks, it was excellent. And then he left to go to America. And Jim Weir came in and we just never seen eyes professionally or personally, to be honest. And it was a hard year for me then. So, but other than that, as I say, I've enjoyed every
Who's your thought of Sops after that? Obviously, your time at Dumbarton, you'd scored goals, but then you'd name manager, and then after 6 weeks, again, at Montrose, manager leaves. Who's your sort of thoughts towards the end of that?
It was just difficult. It was the one time I probably felt that I didn't get a fair crack at it. I just seemed like there was no reasons for it. There was no justification for anything he'd done. He basically just sort of throws me out. And it was very difficult, and also the fact that obviously with me being a Falkirk boy, we trained at Montrose two nights a week, so I was travelling like 2 hours from my home to go to training twice a week, knowing that I wasn't going to be playing at the weekend. So it did make, as I say, it made it more of a chore than enjoyment. And yeah. To me, football should never be a chore. If you're doing it as a job, it's probably the best job in the world. But it felt like that at the time, and it was difficult. And I knew probably after 6 months that I needed to get out, but that unfortunately at that point that was just when the transfer windows had come in. So I'd started the season, so I knew I was having to bide my time to January before I could do anything. So it was a hard 6 months, but I had to get on it.
So you're going from a manager like John Hughes, who's open and honest with you and said that you're in your plans, to the manager Jim Weir at Montrose for an unknown reason just kind of throws you out.
Because obviously we're a small squad, I was on the bench every week, but I was maybe going 2 weeks before getting on, then he put me on for 3 minutes, and then he put me on for 6 minutes, and then, but like, as I say, he never spoke to me, never told me why I wasn't playing, never told me what I needed to do, just generally, I sort of avoided me, and just made it difficult for me, which, it was hard.
So you didn't eventually leave then, you ended up at East Stirlingshire in February 2008. And then, a month later, a certain Jim McAnally arrives at the club as well. So, First of all, how did the move to East Stirlingshire come about?
That was obviously a surprise to me at the time. Believe it or not, I stayed probably about a 50-yard walk to the Firs Park, East Stirlingshire old ground. So I was at my work one day and I got a phone call. A random number, it was some English guy, turned out it was Spencer Fern, who had just put money in. He's like, look, I'm the new sort of investor at East Stirling. I know you're having a tough time at Montrose, but would you like to join East Stirling? So at this point, obviously East Stirling were bottom of League 2, and I had two or three mates played there, and I knew they were basically playing for nothing. So I had just had my first kid at the time, so I was honest with him. I says, look, I would certainly consider that I need to get playing football, I says, but if I'm being honest, financially, I don't think it's going to be viable. I says, I've got to look after my family, I've got a young family, blah, blah, blah. And he was pretty open and says, look, if you just come and meet me, I'm pretty sure I could make it happen. So I did, and obviously I was unaware of the investment Spencer was going to put into the club. And as you say, about two or three weeks after I've came in, Jeremy Mack came in. He originally came in by Clarkie, his mate, but he only lasted to the end of that first season. But the first season, obviously, for the January at the end, it was purely all about avoiding finishing bottom for East Stirling, because I think they were under threat of losing their licence because it had been 2 or 3 in their own. Fortunately enough, we managed to do it on the last day, but aye.
Well, that last day, I think you scored and you just won 3-1. I think it was 4-4 drew. So you're above them. So what kind of pressure
were you
guys under going into that last game?
I think the club were under a fair bit of pressure. I don't think it was a definite that they were going to lose their licence, but there was a lot of talk yet, there was a lot of chat. Personally, I was under all sorts of pressure because I had played 13 games when I signed and hadn't scored a goal. And to be fair, that was what I was brought there to do. I was to be the goal scorer and I hadn't scored a goal. We were going into the last day, we needed to win, and ironically it was against Montrose, who I had just left. So getting a goal that day, it was definitely it was a relief, but it was good to try and put one over on them, and I think they were actually going to try and get in the playoffs for the top of the table as well. So no, it was a great day. We managed to get to win the club. Everybody, there's more of a relief, I would say. Jimmy always says he didn't the club over celebrated it because he was only just in the door. I don't think he realised the pressure that had been under at the time. So no, but it was definitely a massive day for the club though.
What was your first impressions of Jim when he came in the door?
As I've said to anybody that listened, from minute one to this day, I genuinely not got a bad word to say about him. Man, he's probably been the biggest influence on my career from that day that he came in, because just what he's done for me on two or three different occasions. I just loved his training. Everything was enjoyable. Again, as I said earlier, it's how I felt football should be. You should be going to your work, you should be loving being there. And I stayed closer than anybody, but if you asked anybody that would listen, there was maybe 20 players and 4 or 5 coaching staff, and me and Jimmy and Davey Nick would be the last three sitting after every training session. I could just sit and listen to him every night, and it was just a great place to be around.
So when you sort of fell back in love with football again after a difficult couple of years?
Oh, 100%. The following 2 seasons at East Stirling were definitely 2 of my most enjoyable. Unfortunately, we never managed to go up through the playoffs, but both years, I think, finished second and third. which for East Fillon at that point was incredible, and scored a few goals, played with some great players, and it was just a fun time to be around the place. Eh?
Do you kind of give Jim the credit for turning the club around in that sort of second two seasons from finishing second bottom to then challenging for promotion?
Oh, definitely. Between Jim and obviously Spencer, who put the investment in, because it did take a lot of investment. There was a whole turnaround in the playing staff completely. I think we only kept maybe three or four players that had been there. The boys just loved being there. We loved training, we loved playing games, and especially then at East Fillon, Jim, he was so positive. Like, everything we'd done was so positive. If we went a goal down, we'd just stick our striker on, we'd just throw our body up the park. A lot of our games ended up 4-2s and 5-1s and 3-3s, and there was not, I can never ever mind going into a game with any sort of negative thoughts. We didn't play to draw any games, we didn't play to frustrate teams, we just went out and tried to beat teams, and it's probably why we were so successful.
And for you, those successful two seasons got you a move to Ayr, obviously higher up in the leagues as well. Did you kind of find that move difficult?
To be fair, again, Jim was really honest with me. I think he knew that after the second season that Spencer couldn't really sustain the investment for much longer. He was travelling for Sheffield to come and see us, and there was things going on behind the scenes at the club, and Jim was staying for another year, but I think he knew his fellow was only doing it out of a sort of a gesture to Spencer and the people around the club. So he had said to me, look, he'd love me to stay, blah, but he felt that it would be the best for me to go and try and get a move, play at a higher level, and make sure that I was in a successful team, because the squad at East Fillon was going to change again. It probably wasn't going to be for the better.
I was going to say, because obviously that same season East Fillon ended up finishing second bottom, so obviously there's quite a few changes, and you not being there scoring the goals didn't help.
No, that's as I say, Jim had kind of hinted that the squad was going to be sort of stripped apart. I don't think they could afford to keep the type of player that we had. So, it was great. He was honest with me, and I appreciate that again, obviously.
You ended up moving again, though, to Stenishmuir. A year and a half there. You got 18 goals in 58 games.
Yep. It was pretty similar again the first season. It was under Davy Irons, who's back there now, actually, and we had a really good season. We missed out on the playoffs by a point, but I had a right good partnership with Stuart Keane, and scored a good few goals. Enjoyed it, really good. And again, Davey had to leave in the summer because he was becoming a policeman. New manager came in, Martin Corrigan, who I knew previously, but he brought in a sort of different style of play. Wanted to go with just a one big target man. And again, Marty was really honest with me. After five or six games, he sort of came to me and says, look, the way we're going to play, it's not going to suit you. You can try and fight you at a place, but if you can sort yourself a loan move, etc., I wouldn't stand in your way. So I think the night he actually pulled me in, I think he had a lot of close friends at Stirling Albion, and he says to me, I think Stirling would be keen to take you on loan. So Stirling were probably closer to the bottom of League 2 at the time, whereas Stenny were obviously League 1. So I went home that night and I thought to myself, look, as I say, I've always wanted to play football. I'm the one who's happy sitting on a bench. So I went home, spoke to the wife, obviously again, as I say, being for Falkirk, but I'd sort of made my mind I was going to brass neck it and phone Jimmy and just ask him the question if it was anything that would interest him. So I phoned him that night. He says, look, been told I can go out on loan. How did you feel about that? And he says, let me speak to Davey and tells him I'll get back to the one on the phone the next day, and says, look, we'd be delighted to get you in at the end of the season if you can make that happen. Because I think originally Stenny wanted me to go on loan just till January, or just for a month. But I spoke to them and we managed to sort it out that I went along to Peterhead to the end of the season.
that was kind of like the third time in your career that somebody had said, like, I don't want you here. Was that a blow to you again? Do you think, God, not this again?
I think the time at Steny, it was more, I could understand it at Steny. The Montrose were not so much Falkirk. I was a young boy, so it happens. But at Steny, I understood that he was right in what he was saying. The way he wanted to play the game definitely didn't suit me. They signed a 6-foot-4 striker. They wanted to go back to the front. It wasn't going to be my game. It wasn't going to. So I pay respect them for that. And as I say, I never ever let things get me down too much. I always tried to just see the positive. And the positive for me was I was going to a club where I knew the management and I knew I would enjoy myself. Whether I'd play every week, whether I would be successful, but I knew that I would enjoy being about the place. So that was it.
So that made your decision much easier, the fact that you'd been with Jim before and you knew you were going to enjoy yourself.
100%. That was the reason I phoned him, because as is, obviously Peter Reid's, it was a good 3.5 hours for me. So, and that was before I didn't realise what the training situation was, anything like that. But I just felt like I just need to enjoy my football. I just need to get back playing, and I knew I would get a chance with Jimmy.
You mentioned the travel there. It is quite a commitment just to come up every Saturday or every second Saturday to play. I think some guys actually realise how long the trip is.
No, look, it definitely is. But what I would say is and still to this day, I've never been looked after at a club better than I was at Peterhead. Like, we used to travel up a Friday. Obviously, the club, they got the boys from the Central Belt or the Glasgow area. We had a car, an 8 or 9 seater that we shared. We travelled together. They put us up a hotel Friday night. We used to eat at the chairman's restaurant. We used to get anything we ever needed, we got. So it made it so much easier. We weren't travelling up the Saturday morning, stiff, playing the game. But the setup was unbelievable. And by the time I got to the training, we were only training four. We were training four on a Wednesday night, and then the Glasgow boys, we would train on a Monday night down this area. So the travel wasn't as drastic during the week. But as I say, the club are just brilliant with us, so it made it worthwhile.
And how did Jim get you playing again? How did he get your confidence up?
It just when I first came in, we were sort of, he was mixing it up a bit. I think the results had been a bit sort of up and down. I think we were maybe about fourth or fifth. We tried two or three things. So the first maybe 3-4 games, I know we were short of bodies. I played in a couple of different positions. I'd ended up out wide. I'd played midfield for him one day. And then after about 4 or 5 games, me and Rory sort of started to strike a partnership. I think to the end of that season, I played basically every game. And it sounds stupid, but it makes it so much easier when you're playing up front beside somebody like Rory. It's hard not to be successful. So I think that first season when I was alone, we got to the playoff final. That's when, unfortunately, we got beat off East Fife. That was the year Rangers were in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But even at that, that was a great achievement for the club, finishing second to Rangers and missing out by a goal in the playoff final against a team from a division above. So we knew that summer if we added one or two, we would have a right good goal the next season, and thankfully that's how it turned out.
You mentioned Rangers in the league as well. You played in the game that we beat Rangers at Ibrox. What was your memories of that?
It was an incredible day. I think it was obviously, but it wasn't far from full that day. I think it was 40,000 there, and they'd just previously won the league the week before, so they were flying. And to be fair, we probably don't. You have to ride your luck. I think maybe the first 20-25 minutes we were one down and we were under the cosh big style. But that's what I was saying about Jimmy Iller. That day we actually did play sort of 4-5-1, and Rory played up front. So I played sort of wide left, and I think Wee Coxie was playing wide. And after about 25 minutes, we're 1-0 down. We were getting battered, and Jimmy just shouts on. He's like, "Andy, just go up front. So you just go play with Rory. We'll just go 4-4-2." And we're looking at him as if to say, "You're crazy. This could end up like getting an absolute run around here." But we ended up turning it round and winning 2-1. So that's the kind of things he'd done. He was just so positive, just wanted to to Wingate would have been as well. His view would have been as well, losing 4 or 5 nil at Ibrox that day, having a go. And thankfully, we won the game. But what I will say is I always remember that night that my mate, actually, who was at East Stirling at the time, Derek, he was coming to Mabbott that night with him and his wife. And I think I fell asleep about 7:30. I had one beer and fell asleep. I've never been so tired in my whole entire life. But it was a great day. A great day.
What was the atmosphere like? Cause you've probably never played in a stadium like that or in an atmosphere like that before.
Nah, the walking out was incredible. It was just to see the place full. Obviously, they were kind of in celebratory mode, so it was just a right good vibe about the place. And you never expect to go and win the game. You want to go and perform well, and we knew we were a good side, but to go and win the game was unbelievable.
Was you nervous getting out of Ibrox, or was you quite relaxed, thinking it was like almost like a free hit, none to lose?
It's funny because a few people have asked me that, and I genuinely wasn't nervous. I never got nervous much playing. There has been maybe the odd occasion where I felt a bit sort of butterflies, but I remember walking out that day at Ibrox, and I definitely wasn't nervous. It was like, as you say, maybe the sort of, there was no pressure on us. We were there just to enjoy ourselves, have a go. But no, I wouldn't say there was nerves, but probably an excitement, but definitely no nervous.
And for you, on a personal note, from signing for Peterhead on loan until the end of the season, you scored 7 and 18. So how good for you was it to get the goals again and start playing again?
Aye, it was massive for me. As I said, it was all about enjoying it again. Just getting back, playing regular football and scoring goals. So as a striker, there's nothing better than playing games and scoring goals. That's your bread and butter. That's what you want to do. And I did get, I felt then I got a right good run. And I knew myself, coming to the end of the season, that I would have done everything in my power to make the deal permanent. And obviously, thankfully, Jimmy was the same, so it was pretty straightforward in the summer to get it sorted.
I was going to say, was that a deal that was pretty straightforward to get sorted out?
100%, I did. Look, obviously, the boys that travelled to the Central Belt, we had to be financially looked after to make it worth your while, but money wouldn't have been an issue. I was desperate to just come up and play, and obviously Jimmy knew that, so I know that deal was never going to be a problem.
And having missed out in promotion the previous season, what was the targets getting into that new season?
Oh, I think we knew for early on. I think pre-season we spoke and Jimmy was honest with us and says, look, anything short of winning the league and we're letting ourselves down. Because we had strengthened, we knew we had a right good finish to the season before. We had strengthened with 2 or 3 right good signings, and we knew ourselves that, look, it's never easy to win a league. It's difficult, there's good sides there, but if we didn't win the league that year, we felt we would have failed. So that was always our aim.
Did that put added pressure on you?
It probably did. At the start of the season, we definitely never started well. I think after the first quarter, we were maybe about 5th or 6th. But we got to about October, November, and went on a ridiculous run. I think we won something like 13 games in a row. We went about 15 unbeaten anyway. So it maybe did take us a month or two to sort of deal with the pressure. Whether teams were coming to frustrate us and we couldn't break them down or whatever it was. But once we got going, we really kicked on.
You got 10 goals that season, but you should maybe mention this, the 2 red cards that you got as well that season. Stirling away and Clyde at home.
Stirling away was probably unjust. I actually went on as a sub that day. I wasn't actually fit. I was a sub, and we were one or two down, so I went on. And it was one of them where we had a free kick, so I was standing just round about the penalty box, and the defender was sort of pulling at my shirt a wee bit, just nipping, the usual nonsense. And I've just sort of swung to try and get his arm off me. And as I've swung, the linesman started flagging and told the ref that I've elbowed the boy at the edge of the box. But to be fair, the boy ends up getting sent off as well. I think he got a second booting for this. So the two of us, and it's a good mate of mine, so the two of us are walking off the park, sort of both sit and think to ourselves, we've not really done nothing wrong here. And the two of us have been sent off. But happens in the Clyde one. I've made complaints about the Clyde one. I'd actually been substituted in the Clyde one. I was actually on the dugout. I'd been taken off that day. I'd been booked during the game. And then somebody put on, I can't remember, it was an absolute shocker, a tackle in, I think it was on Coxie, right in front of our dugout, and it spilled sort of to the sort of technical area. And I had just reacted to something somebody done the technical, kind of pushed somebody. And, again, the referee came out and gave me a second booking that time. But that one was definitely my fault.
Right, no question.
No.
So, the good thing, obviously, we mentioned Clyde, you go down there, and you win the league down there, you score. There's nothing like winning a league, but winning it against Clyde, was that maybe a wee bit of sweeter?
It was probably sweeter because we genuinely didn't think we were going to win it that day. Because I think Aaron lost to East Stirling, who were sort of down the bottom end of the table. So we felt that if we went down to Clyde and won, the following week we were back up at Balmoral. We presumed we'd win it that week if we won the two games, but when I think it was quite early on, we realised maybe we were 10-15 minutes to go, we knew East Stirling were winning 2-0, and we were 2-0 up, so it was an unbelievable day. As you say, there's nothing like winning a league. It's what you set up to do at the start of every season, and I think we played Annan midweek at Balmoral, a Tuesday night at Balmoral, and I think we knew we beat them that night 3-1. And I think that's the night we really knew, like, that's, we'd sort of not won it, but I think that put us 10 points clear. We had about seven games to go, so that was a massive night for us. And that sort of, from then on in, it always just felt like a matter of when, rather than if. But, no, look, as I say, we were unbelievable that season. We went in some run, and we won it at Clyde, and it was a, it probably made for a messier weekend winning at Clyde, that's for sure, because we arrived, as I say, not expecting to win the league. So we ended up, there must have been about 7 or 8 of the Glasgow boys or the sort of boys for doing this area. We just jumped on the bus back to Aberdeen. We never had, nobody had clothes, nobody had money, nobody had and that was us for the Monday. So that was definitely a messy weekend, but that's what you play the game for, to win leagues and enjoy yourself, so it was brilliant.
How highly do you rate that as a moment in your career?
It was right up there, definitely right up there. Look, obviously, I've been lucky. I've had some good times, obviously, scoring on my debut for Falkirk, who I supported. I won the league with Falkirk as well. The 1 year I was at here, we got promotion, we won the playoffs at Brechin. But for the fact that I felt like, obviously, that season I was a big part of it. It was the club's first trophy in the senior ranks. And as you said earlier, because we put the pressure on ourselves to do it, it probably made it that wee bit more special, as if to say, like, we were right, we were justified in our confidence. So, no, it was right up there as one of my best achievements, definitely.
Did you feel you'd almost like found your place, having given that, you know, a previous couple of clubs have said they weren't you weren't a part of their plans, it almost feel like you'd come home, so to speak.
As I said, under Jimmy, I've loved working under him. I've enjoyed every minute of it. And that season probably is when I felt like I'd made the biggest contribution to a team that I'd ever made. As you say, I scored 10 goals, but I think there was a sort of running joke. Jimmy used to even mention it in the team talks that, like, my job wasn't to score, my job was to assist Rory. So it's just you, the your job, just you. Just keep setting up Rory, and Rory will get us the goals. But obviously, I chipped in with a fair few. And to be fair, at the end of that season, me and Rory both ended up getting nominated for Player of the Year, the League Player of the Year. So I think that was unusual. That I don't even think it's ever happened since, that two strikers for the same team have been not part of the nominations for the League Player of the Year. So that showed how good a partnership we were, to be fair.
I was going to maybe mention it later on, but you brought him up now. So Rory McCarthy, obviously, for you as a strike partner to hear him, it must have been a dream.
He's definitely the best strike partner that I've played with. I've been fortunate to play with a lot of really, really good strikers over the years, but as a partnership and as a guy and seeing what he can do, and everybody knows Rory could have played at any level he wanted. There's an absolute no question in my mind that he could have played SPL in Scotland, without a shadow of a doubt. And it was just a joy to play alongside, because Jimmy used to laugh because the two of us were probably similar in a way where we kind of done things off the cuff. We probably frustrated the living daylights out of Jimmy a lot of the time. But he knew that one of us was liable to do something that would help him win the game. And I just loved playing with Rory because I could understand what he wanted to do and he could understand what I wanted to do. So it just worked.
I was looking at his stats earlier on, and Rory scored 88 goals in your time there. So how many of those 88 goals did you think he set up?
Oh, minimum 40. Because I eat out the 88, a good 28 of them were probably penalties, and I must have won about 20 then. So.
Is that the kind of things you mentioned when you're getting your contract and you get your assist bonus and things like that?
Assist bonus. 100%.
So you've got to remember Rory needs a good partner. So don't worry about what I can do, just worry about what he does. But it was a joy to play alongside him. All joke aside, as a partnership, it just really worked. We clicked.
So you got promotion, won the league, got up to the 14-15 season. We should mention the Dunfermline game straight away.
Shaking the heads is all.
We'll just get that. I mean, I mentioned the game, but you weren't even playing that game, though, were you?
No, I wasn't playing that. I was in the dugout. I was injured. So I was in the back of the dugout, and I've never seen anything like it. I think the referee just sort of lost the plot early doors. Jamie Redmond puts in a tackle, clean as a whistle, wins the ball, straight red. Stephen Noble does the same, puts in a tackle, knocks the ball out for a throw, straight red. I can't even remember who the other red card was.
Jordan Brown, I think it was.
Was it who?
Jordan Brown.
Jordan's was for, that was for a tackle, right enough. But then the boy Falkingham was rolling about everywhere. Every time someone went near him, he was screaming. He was flinging his arms about. He was rolling. So it got a bit heated at half time in the tunnel. It got a bit heated at full time in the tunnel. And we were sitting in the bus, and a few of my mates had been asking me what had happened. And look, in the emotions, I put a tweet out. I've had a bit of reaction to the tweet. I think I'd seen something like, oh, at least I'm not Josh Falkingham. I can look myself in the mirror tonight. And then the Dunfermline fans started jumping onto that, so I had a bit of aggro with them. And then I thought that was the end of it. The Saturday night, went to my bed. Monday morning, Jimmy phoned me and says, "You'll never believe it." I said, "What is this? If you want to give you a 2-game ban for me." So I ended up getting 1-game suspension and 1-game suspended ban. He's like, "Look, forget it, it's done." So Jimmy sort of backed me and says, "Look, watch what you're doing, but look, he didn't see it as a massive issue." And then, thankfully, later on in the season, I managed to, I think I scored the equaliser in about the 85th minute against Dunfermline at Balmoral. And the only thing I remember that day is that I was running about the length of the park to celebrate in front of the Dunfermline fans. So, a bit of an added by own moment.
Do you think you got Mayor wound up because it was Dunfermline, or just because it was that bad, or that heated a game?
Originally, just the game. As I say, the actions of Falkingham probably originally, but later on then because they were sort of giving me a bit of aggro back, it then became sort of Falkingham-Dunfermline and all the history that's between them. So I've always had a wee bit of aggro off the Dunfermline fans, but after that it went to a different level. But it doesn't bother me. The stuff at the games I can deal with. There was, to be fair, it did get to near the end of that season. I did actually had to shut down my social media and stuff for a good year or two, because I got to the stage where, unfortunately, there was two or three Dunfermline fans that they posted pictures of my daughter, and they were writing stuff. She was about 5 or 6 at the time, and they were on Twitter posting tweets like sort of bringing her into it, and derogatory remarks about her and my son and stuff. So I thought that was probably a line that was crossed. Mm-hmm. Where I'm offered interaction with supporters on Twitter, but they sort of went, and rather than get involved and trying to defend it and trying to, I just thought, look, I'll just step away from it and let it sort of die down. So that's what I had to do.
Do you think you've learned from that, and do you think you've kind of, can you pass on your experiences to some of the younger lads that you've maybe been playing with?
Aye, oh, definitely learned from it. As I said, back up the social media and that now. Look, social media is there for interaction between clubs and fans and players and stuff, and I would never try and take that away, but there probably is a time on a Saturday night, especially maybe after games, where you're maybe better just sitting your phone down and forgetting about it, and like probably take a bit more time to reflect before you get involved, like maybe the Sunday or the Monday, then have a chat, decide what you want to say. But look, people are going to make mistakes on social media, just the same as that. If you're in a pub on a Saturday night, you could say something that you probably regret on the Sunday. So it's no different for that, I suppose. But I definitely think the game's better for it.
Do you think it maybe puts some of the younger players off interacting with supporters or other players on social media just for the backlash that they might receive?
Yeah, there definitely is some who just don't want to get involved whatsoever, as you say, just because they didn't want to be seen in a negative way. Whereas, look, everybody's not going to like you. There's going to be people who like you, there's going to be people who dislike you. Just be you and then take it from there. But I know definitely there is. But there's some people who love it, some people who don't. That's just the way it is. But I certainly don't mind.
I think in social media, like life in general, I mean, there's people out there who will just deliberately antagonise people and try and wind people up and just see a nasty side of them. And it's how you deal with it, I guess, is the best way to deal with it.
That's it. As I said, as you're spot on, there's people who are there who are just doing things for a reaction. And the best way for me, I always try to react with a bit of banter or a bit of humour, or try not to get too caught up in it. But sometimes, as I say, when they cross the line, it becomes difficult. But I think I managed to deal with it all right.
What was your, Jim had said you were going to get a suspension, but what was your teammates' reaction? Did they kind of like it? Did they appreciate it, or kind of take it as a laugh?
There was definitely a lot of laughs at the time. Obviously, when the suspension came in, I think everybody was more sort of shocked rather than anything else. I don't think anybody was upset with me, or I think it was just a case of, like, is this serious, or are you actually getting a ban for a tweet? But I think it was just a stage where the compliance officer was on a busy time. They just tried to ban players. There was a few boys banned for what we felt were silly things at the time, so look, good deal. I ended up only missing one game, and to be fair, I was kind of half injured at the time anyway, so but I missed the game. I probably needed an extra week or two's rest anyway, so that wasn't too bad.
The good thing was a parody account created, though, wasn't there?
There was, I'm presuming it was some sort of Dunfermline fan, but
I'm safe enough to assume that,
at least that was a. At least that was good humour, though.
Aye.
Humoured, as I said, I didn't mind that. It was the personal stuff that wasn't ideal, but no, look, it's all a wee bit of fun, isn't it?
But you're back on now, and you've learned from it.
Aye, oh, definitely. As I say, I still have interaction there. There's still people who'll get upset at some things you're saying, but you just, I think I know now when to put the phone down and when not. That's probably it.
Are you more aware of what you're posting on social media rather than what you were maybe 5-10 years ago?
Maybe no. I would never. The original post that I'm going to post, I still probably would, but it's maybe I don't react to the reaction as much.
Yeah.
Like, so if I post something and two or three people reply to it with a negative, I'll just leave it. And whereas before, I would always try and defend myself, or always try and, whereas now I just think, well, everybody's not going to like your posts, that's all well and good, so just get on with it.
But because we kind of know your kind of character, so we can read one of your tweets and go, I know, he's just been out for the banter. Whereas somebody who maybe doesn't know you on a personal level, obviously we didn't know you on a personal level, but we know you as a player, what kind of character you are, somebody might read that and go, he's out of here.
Aye. No, that's it. No, you got it. It's the same as anything, even text messages, things like that. Things can get read wrong. If you're not seeing somebody face to face, or how they're saying it, or what context it's in, it can be read wrong. And you're right, that's probably why I don't react as much, because people's reactions to it doesn't really bother me as much anymore. I'm saying what I'm, and as you say, my mates or people that I've played with or family, they all know what the tweet's about, and that I'm happy with that.
Okay, we'll move on to what turned out to be your final season at Ballymore. For you personally, was it a difficult season? Because, you know, Jim had brought in like Shane Sutherland and Leighton McIntosh, so your previous partnership with Rory McAllister maybe wasn't as frequent as it was before.
Aye, to be fair, again, I've always been honest about my last season. It was definitely all on me. I was never near fit enough. I was never near where I needed to be fitness wise. I'd probably let myself down, and I just couldn't get back to a level. Don't get me wrong, I was carrying an injury for about the November. I had a problem with my knee, and I'd been seeing somebody, and I knew I probably needed an operation. But because, although I had brought in Shane and Leighton, because we're quite a small squad, I'd spoke to Jimmy about it, and we had sort of agreed around about the November, December time that could I try and hold off to the summer for the operation, and he would only use me sparingly, so I would come off the bench when needed, train when I needed, I didn't train as much. But as I say, start of the season, 100% my fault, was nowhere near the shape I needed to be physically, and I've no complaints about being at the team. And to be fair to Jim, and especially the club, they were magnificent with me, because I got to the end of the season, as I say, coming off the bench every now and again, and I knew then that I would be moving on, that would probably be, my two kids were growing up, I wanted to spend more time with them, I knew there was a chance I could go back to East Stirling, I knew the new manager there, and I had spoke to Jim about this, and what he says to me was that he had spoke to Roger, the chairman, and they didn't want to let me go until they paid for my operation. So what happened is in the summer, Peter Ed or Roger paid for my operation, which was thousands of pounds worth. I'd done the op, done my rehab, and then what Jimmy done was they gave me a new deal until the end of September. Mm-hmm. They let me come back, do the pre-season, play a couple of pre-season games, then they sent me, we worked a deal that I would go on loan to East Stirling for a month, for the month of August, just so they could have a look at me, see if I was fit, if my knee was holding up, because they played an Astro. Done that, went and played three or four games with East Stirling, everything seemed to be fine, and then Peter Heat just released me from my contract and let me go and sign for East Stirling. So, long story short, they basically looked after me unbelievably well, because as a club, they had made, they could have said to me at the end of that season, your contract's up, that's you, you're free to move on. But because I suppose I had sort of put the operation off, been sort of loyal, tried to play through the injury a bit, Jimmy and Roger between them had decided that as a club they felt the right thing to do was sort of pay for the operation and make sure I was fit again before I moved on, which was massively appreciated, and they didn't need to do it, so it was incredible.
I don't think you would have gotten that with any other club, would you?
No, 100%. Some clubs will maybe pay for the operation if you've got like a 2-year deal, or if you've got but 100% don't think that I'd been looked after like that anywhere else.
That was the season, obviously, as well, with the Challenge Cup final. Yeah. What's your kind of, I know you didn't play in the final, but the games leading up to the final, what's your memories of those?
It was great. It was obviously a great run. I can't remember too much of the earlier games. We played Queen's Park in the semi. I remember the semi being at Hampden and the final being obviously at Hampden. So, but it was a day that, as you say, I never got on. I think I probably would have played some part, but Jamie Stevenson got injured early on in the game, so I think he had to make a sort of defensive sub, which Jimmy didn't usually do. It used to be just strikers and be his changes, but I think we had to make a sub early doors, and again, I think with Nathan Blockley maybe went on, and then at that point it only left us two subs for the second half, so I knew there was probably, at that stage I probably knew that I wasn't going to play a part, but just the whole atmosphere of the day, like we stayed in the hotel, get the cup final suit, my family, my kids, they were a bit older, so to have them there, obviously there was like 50 odd thousand at the game, and for them to just to see that and just to be part of it was, it was still a great day.
Is it, I know the scoreline was 4-0, but having spoken to some of the guys previously, I think it maybe flattered Rangers a little bit, the score.
It did. We were definitely in the game. We started the game really well, to be fair. I think Tavernier scored an absolute wonder goal. So that kind of dented us. But even I think we're at 2-0 down, I'm sure we had a couple of chances. I always remember, I think Nicky Riley had a great chance at 2-0. And but if you score one of them, you never know. But the longer the game goes on, the more attack we got, and the more tired we get. And the boys had absolutely ran themselves into the ground. So the fitness was always going to be an issue. But look, as you say, we didn't let ourselves down. We gave it everything. And obviously we lost a top quarter side, so there was no shame in that.
I think Stephen Noble puts his hands up for the last two goals. He conceded the penalty at the end, or he can certainly go fight back for the third goal.
I always remember talking. I think it was maybe Michael O'Halloran maybe came on, who I think was like an Olympic sprinter, and Steg Wells had gone by that stage, so I don't think Steg could have been on a motorbike and no caught him. As I say, it was a great day. We went out that night, the whole squad, the management, everybody went out. We had a great night. It's something that they can't take away from the boys. We've played in a National Cup final against Rangers, so unbelievable.
Although you lost, were you still proud of your performance, or were you still kind of disappointed?
We're disappointed probably right in the immediate aftermath, but as the night went on and as the days go by after it, you realise, look, we've got the Peterhead to the cup final. It's not something that, like, there's clubs that will never get played at that level against or in that sort of atmosphere at 50,000 people at a cup final. So, no, we were definitely proud of ourselves.
Is that one of them things that is, it takes a couple of days or weeks even just to sink in that the achievement, although you've lost, but as you said, you've got to the cup final, which many teams win a day in their history?
Definitely. I think, as you say, days, weeks, it's probably more when you look back at it. Like, I still see the highlights pop up every now and again in your memories and pictures that I took that day, like before the game in the hotel, all the boys with the suits on. My kid, as I say, I got my two kids came on the park after the game. We were getting our medals and stuff, and it's probably more when you look back at it that you realise how big a day it was for the club.
As you said, it's not just the game itself; it's the whole day. As you said, you're with the guys, you're dressed in your suits, you've got your family there as well. So not only is it just about that 90 minutes in the park that the spectators see, it's generally the build up, even the week before it as well, the build up to the whole occasion.
That's it. It's just a special time, a time that, as you see, there's more media interest. Even for the supporters, just the sort of day or the weekend, I think a lot of the supporters, I'm sure, came down on the Friday night as well. So it's like a full weekend for the whole club, and everybody enjoyed it. And as you say, we're disappointed to lose the game, but there was always a chance that was going to happen when they're playing Rangers. So it was an amazing time.
And as you said, it was your last season. What was your thoughts as you left Balmoa for the last time?
It was hard, but I knew at that point, I knew it was the right thing for me. I needed to spend more time with my family. My son had started, he was more into his football, but then he was getting to an age where I wanted to go and see him on a Saturday morning, for example, and still be able to go and play my football. I wanted to go to his training at night. And then again, I needed to be playing again because I wasn't fit enough. I had to get fit. The only way to get fit at that age is to go and play games. And to be honest, my fear was at that season that I thought I was coming to an end. I genuinely believed that season, halfway through that season, that if it wasn't my last, it was going to be one of my last. I couldn't see myself having another year or two in me. My body wasn't in a good place. And fortunately, when I go back to Easterling playing a few games, and I actually feel fitter now than I did then, so I'm hopeful that I've still got another year or two left, and that's a good 5 years down the line. So,
do you think that operation has added years to your career?
I'm not sure the operation. My knee was just a pain after games. I was fine when I was playing them. I think it was just the realisation that I was letting myself down physically. I wasn't giving myself the best opportunity, whether it be the lifestyle I was living, whether it be I wasn't training hard enough. But it was just that sinking feeling that I knew that I wasn't fit enough, and I've nobody to blame for that but myself. And I remember, it was actually David Nicholls, and he'll no bother me saying this. David Nicholls retired when he was 34, and he says to me that season, he says, Andy, if I can give you one piece of advice, don't retire until you physically have to, because David was in better shape at 38 than he was when he was 33. Like, he got himself super fit, and he still is super fit, David, but he regrets not being in that shape when he was playing, retiring too early. And I always stuck in my mind, he says, because once you retire, he says, you'll regret it. So I've always vowed since that day to speak to him that I'll play literally until my body doesn't allow it anymore.
How do you sum up your time with Peterhead then?
Look, I loved it. I loved every single minute of it. There's genuinely not a season, there's not even a spell, not even a month, not even a half spell that I didn't enjoy. The training was brilliant, the boys were brilliant, the dressing room was incredible. And I know Jimmy does actually mention that potentially just as I signed, I think they brought me in, they brought another boy in, a boy, Dean Richardson. And I know that we sort of helped. I wouldn't say there was cliques, but I think before we signed, I think there was maybe a dressing room divide between the sort of Aberdeen boys and the boys that travelled. I don't think that there was enough of a camaraderie, like a togetherness, and he got rid of a couple of players, brought a few different players in, and to be honest, as a dressing room, it's as close as I've been to a bunch of boys anywhere. It was just a great place to be around. There was never any issues between boys. There was always, everybody was smiling when you went in. It was just a great place to be around, and I love every single minute, as I say. And I'm talking about for the directors, like Ian and Harry would come to training with us and cook us food. We'd be training at Fawthorne, and they'd be in the kitchen cooking us food for after it, and the office staff, the supporters, as you say, we'd go into the bar after the game, and just the whole place. It was just a great place to be around, to be fair.
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Enjoyed every minute of it. Hope it wasn't too taxing for you.
No, I've loved it. But I wasn't sitting well with anybody. So, no, it was
wasn't as bad as what you thought it was going to be.
No, look, when you asked, I'm more than happy to do it. I listened to Jordan Brown's the other week there, so no, I knew it would be a good chat.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll maybe see you at Balmoral again someday.
Hopefully. Cheers.
That was Andy Rogers on his time at Peterhead, and we'd like to thank Andy for his honesty and for taking the time to speak with us. Next week, we'll have our final Blue Toon Legend interview, so once again, keep an eye out on our social media for more details. Until then, for Martin Smith and myself, Colin Byers, thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll see you all again very soon. Cheers.